This is the Senate Committee on Judiciary meeting March 31st, 1987 at 3 p.m. in room 343. Today we're having a work session on Senate Bills 111, 174, 177, 209, 210, 211, 213, 223, 300, 311, and 581.
Senate Judiciary Committee will come to order at 3:25 p.m. We have a quorum now with Senators Brenneman, Hamby, Wires, and Frye, and we'll take What is it? Go ahead. What bill is that?
223, the one we were talking about?
Yeah.
223.
All right. Work session on Senate Bill 223. The chair moves Senate Bill 223 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Frye.
Aye. Motion fails. All right. We Senate Bill 223.
That's what we're just
working
on.
I know, but what's the? On 174. Yes. Let's go to a work session on Senate Bill 174.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this bill relates to probation officers being given the authority to cite in lieu of arrest on probation violations. The probation officers and the court administrator have worked out an amendment. Mr. Swank is here to explain the amendment, which makes some changes to suit both parties. Mr. Swank, do you want to step forward and explain to the committee the proposed amendments?
For the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. When this bill was up for hearing, as the committee will remember, Cy Kornbrot from the Parole and Probation Officers expressed concern that the language in Section 2 of the bill made it unclear whether or not this could be on a case-by-case basis or whether or not this kind of authority to cite in lieu of arresting for violations of conditions of parole or probation are something that could be done under a general order of the court, and desired that it be made clear that judges for their own cases could set up the kind of system they wanted in order to review these. They could pick certain kinds of cases and say, for these kinds of cases, if they violate probation, you can cite them, but on these kinds of cases, we'd like you to come before us before you get that citation authority. Or they could designate particular people who they would prefer to have arrested rather than cited because of the nature of their crime. At the request of committee counsel, the State Court Administrator's Office sat down with Cy Kornbrot and worked out some amendments that made it perfectly clear, to borrow a phrase, that that each judge could work this out in their own way, and they could do it in either blanket arrangements where certain kinds of cases were taken, or on a case-by-case basis, or whatever the judge was comfortable with. Cy Kornbrot told me that I was authorized to let the committee know he was happy with the amendments and that they addressed his concerns.
Questions by the committee? What do you want to do?
I'll move the amendments.
Senator Hamby moves the Swank amendments. dated March 12, 1987. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Okay.
Senator Hamby moves Senate Bill 174 as amended to the floor. Do pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman? Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Wires?
Aye.
Frye?
Aye. Motion passes. All right. Council, on these support bills, you want to take, give us an explanation on each one, starting with Senate Bill 209?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Mr. Young is here to explain changes in all three bills. The first bill before you requires payments to go through DHR. We had a hearing on it. There were no significant controversial issues that I could recall. On page 4, there is a proposed amendment just to clarify some language on page 4, line 34. Before cases, the word cases, insert all other cases.
Do we need Mr. Young up here or not?
Well, he's going to need to be up here on the other bills, so.
All right. This is all, that's all that you, we that's the only one. Change on 209?
That's the only change on 209.
Give us a short, yeah, Senator Cohen.
No, I just want, I guess I just need to make sure that we, whoever carries this bill is clear to have noted the fiscal analysis and have Larry explain that to us so we don't get sandbagged on the floor.
Is there, that's what I was
is that about. Increased money, is it going to be federal offset? What is that, the, we've got a fiscal analysis here of a cost of $338,000 and a million something to the Department of Human Resources Adult and Family Services Division. We just need to, as part of your discussion, Mr. Chairman, on this bill, I want somebody to explain that.
Excuse me, 211, 209. Want to go ahead, please, and respond to that request?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Lawrence Young with the Department of Justice. I'm not particularly qualified to speak on the fiscal impact, as the primary fiscal impact statement is being submitted by the Department of Human Resources. It was my understanding that the fiscal impact that they had submitted for this particular bill was $338,743 for this biennium. That's how much it would cost if this bill were enacted, and that all of those funds would be general funds. Now, just recently in the back of the room, Mr. Putnam was indicating that he is, in fact, attempting to make a claim that federal match be obtained. Federal match is currently at 70%, and it will be dropping to 68% as of October 1 of this year. And it would run at that rate for 2 years. Now, I don't know whether or not you can successfully claim federal match on this. Certainly DHR would attempt to do so under federal regulations, if they could. The statement that I think Senator Cohen is referring to earlier regarding a fiscal impact of
$1,747,000. That's an 89891. I understand that. It says, we have the same, we have 338,743 here, general fund in 8789, and then we have 8991. Of a million. I guess that reflects the decrease in federal monies that you just shared.
It also, Senator, reflects an increase in the number of cases that are being monitored by the system. The first year of operation of the bill, you're increasing the total number of cases in the DHR system at the rate of approximately 600 cases per month. So obviously, for the first year of operation, you have far fewer cases than you do in succeeding years.
I guess we really don't have an answer yet, then, do we?
Mr. Chairman?
Well, I think it's there. I think it's just a question of, I mean, that's real. Those are essentially real numbers, and that, and they're from increased caseloads and it's down here.
Senator Brenneman?
One of my counties, Tillamook District Attorney, wrote asking my support of this and indicates that it's a significant, could be a significant cost savings to him in his department. Would you have any idea what that's going to save for as an offset?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Brenneman, I'm not sure exactly what it would save the Tillamook County District Attorney's Office. The savings that he is probably referring to is the fact that if a...
Time.
Yeah, it's time, and if a custodial parent walks into the office and wants to have support enforcement services given to that parent, there's no arrearage officially. And so what the district attorney has to do is essentially go through the shoebox, figure out what the arrearage is, go through a process to set the arrears, and if no agreement can be reached, then it has to go into court, and the judge gets to listen to all the receipts and the conflicting testimony from the two parties. Sometimes it gets down to a swearing contest. All of that would be essentially eliminated for orders that are entered after October 1 of 87 under this bill. It wouldn't help all the orders that are already out there. You still have to go through that process. There's no way DHR can handle all the orders that are currently out there.
Senator Brenneman, is that any other questions?
No.
Any other questions by committee members?
Mr. Chair, does...
Senator Hamby?
Is there a referral to Ways and Means for this amount, or do we just test it on the floor?
I don't believe that. As it came to committee, there was a referral to Ways and Means.
Senator Wires, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I suppose if you're going
to
get it
over to the House,
You'd have to talk with a couple of members of Ways and Means not to get up and move down there from the floor, which I would think, as far as understood, that everybody, this big a bill, everybody knows is going to end up in Ways and Means.
Yeah.
But I don't know if anybody's gone around done any missionary work with the Ways and Means people. I see that Mr. Young's testimony points out that that's where it ended up last session, and I don't know if anybody asked the governor to put this into his budget. I assume they didn't.
Chair, no. In my understanding, it is not anticipated in the governor's budget.
So that gives it probably very slim pickings. They're turning down requests for prenatal care and things like that. But I think it's a very important thing and should be done.
I do. I just
very
want
important.
To say that how much of this are we back into the federal direction? Are we just decided to do, you know, some of us have supported this for a while. Some of us said no because when we were in the main big budget cuts, we're going to try it sort of out in the field. And then agree that it ought to be done centrally and the records kept centrally. So I'm there. I just want to know, again, for our discussion primarily, either to the lobby Ways and Means member, how much involvement do we have in federal regulations, or is this just our personal choice along the way?
Chairman, Senator Cohen, this particular bill is not required by federal regulations, per se. So in that respect, it doesn't have anything to do with federal regulations. It does mesh in with the federal child support enforcement program and make that program operate more efficiently. I would also point out that in Section 1, Subsection 6, on page 2, lines 25 through 28, there is a provision in there which would authorize DHR to charge fees, which would at least offset some of the cost. There is no specific amount there, and I assume that if and when the bill makes it to Ways and Means, they would consider that particular provision.
Okay. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I would move the proposed amendment on page 4, line 34, all other cases.
All right, Senator Hamby moves Senate Bill 209 be amended on Page four, line 34, by inserting before the word cases, the words all other. Any discussion on that amendment? Any objection? So ordered. What do you want to do with this bill?
Move it to the floor.
Move it to the floor. Yeah.
Senator Wires moves Senate Bill 209 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Senator Cohen, would you carry that? Senator Wires, maybe you could say something to the co-chair of Ways and Means on that, or somebody. And Senator Hanby, would you carry Senate Bill 174? All right. Can you make a note of this, carriers? Okay, counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, regarding Senate Bill 210, basically this bill provides for the administrative enforcement of support orders from other courts out of state and from other agencies out of state. There are two sets of amendments that Mr. Young is here to help explain, both to address some technical problems in the bill and to address some concerns that were raised by one or more committee members. The committee should have, from the last hearing, proposed amendments dated March 18, being circulated now, or proposed amendments dated March 31st. Also in your files should be a fiscal analysis dated March 31st. Maybe Mr. Young could first explain the changes proposed in the amendments dated March 18.
Mr. Chair, Lawrence Young, Department of Justice. On the amendments dated March 18th, the first area that is attacked is found on page 7, which involves the administrative appeal hearings. The Support Enforcement Division has a notice and finding process where they serve an obligor with notice that they will be required to pay support, and the person that is served has an opportunity to request an administrative hearing. The amendments in this section go to the actual process of having that hearing, and then the subsequent appeal, if you desire it, to the circuit court. The amendments really go to the latter part. If there's been an administrative hearing and the parent wants to go to circuit court for yet another appeal, the theory is that the circuit court will hear the case de novo, essentially brand new. They will take whatever's in the file that's been sent to the court, and they will put the putative obligor, the guy who's going to pay support, on the stand. He'll have a chance to testify, and then the judge will sit there and enter whatever support order is deemed appropriate. So in talking with Mr. Kramer, he had some concerns that perhaps was not sufficiently clear in the bill. So the First Amendment is on page 7, line 18, after resides, insert for a hearing de novo, to make clear that it's still for a hearing de novo and not a hearing on the record, as that sometimes means in the Court of Appeals.
Let me ask you. That makes an awfully, in my view, a rather awkward sentence there. Would you take a look at inserting that language after the word order on line 16? See if that does, if that reads a little better.
It's fine.
Everybody see what I'm doing?
No.
Yes. The words for a hearing de novo, instead of the place suggested in the amendment, would be placed on line 16 after the word order. Appeal of the hearing officer's or administrator's order for a hearing de novo shall be taken, and so forth. I take it from the looks on your faces that you're not with me.
We don't have amendments.
I'm looking at the amendments, proposed amendments dated March 18th.
Yes. Yeah.
We've got something right. March 31.
Yeah, that's the next thing we're going to take up. We're looking at March 18th first, and the suggestion is to put those words on line 18. I'm saying it's a little awkward. I think it reads a little awkwardly, and I'm just suggesting putting those words in a different place, to wit, on line 16, after the word order. Any objection to that, or question about what I'm doing there? Just a sentence structure change, you know, how I nitpick about that.
It's fine, you don't need to ask it when you get, when it's only nitpicking, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, well, that's all I ever do is just change things because I'm picking nits.
Can I go back and can we move your change?
No, we don't need to, if everybody's agreeable.
Okay, do it.
On page 8, line 31, now we haven't talked about that yet, Mr. Young.
And Mr. Kramer raised the concern that...
I need to find out how many are in here.
When the registration petition essentially is pending before the administrator and the parent is saying, hold it, that order that was entered in the other state was entered and they didn't have any personal jurisdiction of me, which state's standards of in personam jurisdiction apply? And so the intent of the amendment is to say that applicable standards of the foreign jurisdiction would apply. In other words, was there a jurisdiction for a court to enter an order in the foreign jurisdiction? And also the standards of Oregon apply. Was there due process in Oregon? And if both standards are met, then it's deemed that there is in personam jurisdiction. Essentially get two bites at the apple.
Question about that? Okay.
Mr. Young, can you go back and to explain the line 21 change from prima facie to evidence?
Okay, on page 7, line 21, when you certify to the circuit court for the hearing de novo the various documents that are in the administrative file, the bill as originally constituted said those documents constitute prima facie proof. Mr. Kramer raised the point that perhaps you don't want to do that, and the Support Enforcement Division is happy to say that all that those things constitute is evidence. And the intent is that when you get the putative obligor in front of the judge, that obligor will state his or her story, and the order will be entered accordingly, and the documents are merely evidence that there is some ability to pay.
Okay. Question on that? Brian?
On page 10, line 22, this is for an administrative income withholding order, and it basically parallels the language found in ORS 25.050, which is for judicial wage withholding order, provides, when the bill was originally drafted, 25.070 was deleted and 25.080 was inserted. And the proposed amendment is to put 25.070 back in, because if you read that particular section, that talks about support enforcement fees, and that's what that sentence is about. And so both sections would be referenced.
All right. Any question about that? All right, and now we're looking at the proposed amendments dated March 18th, and the change on the first line of those proposed amendments from line 18 to line 16, and the word in quotes changes from resides to order. With that understanding, then the chair moves the March 18th proposed amendments to Senate Bill 210. Any discussion? Any objection? That's so ordered.
Now, do you want to talk about the bill, or I need to ask a question?
Definitely.
Questions
about the
how did we hear in testimony how much are we creating more de novos at the appeals court? I just need to know that, and I don't recall the testimony specifically. And do we have a number on that, or any kind of estimate from anybody other? Could I ask the witness?
Go ahead,
sir. Chair.
Maybe
Senator,
it's in here. It's been a while since we heard this, and maybe I wasn't here.
Senator Kahn, to my knowledge, there has never been an appeal to the Court of Appeals out of the administrative process. When we're talking about a hearing de novo in this particular bill, we're talking about a hearing de novo in circuit court where there's just testimony instead of a hearing on the record. If this matter were appealed to the Court of Appeals, then you'd go on the record.
So we're talking de novo to the circuit court from the hearings officer.
From the hearings officer, so that the obligor can come in and provide testimony. You don't want to have it just strictly on the record. Somebody has to type the record, and that people get frustrated. Obligors get frustrated with that.
Okay. That answered my question. Thank you.
All right. Now, going to the amendments dated March 31st. Want to go through those with us, please?
Okay. Mr. Chair, in the hearing, several concerns were voiced by the committee, one of which involves the registration procedure. When a court or administrative order from another state is going to be essentially confirmed or registered administratively in Oregon, the question was raised, can you change the amount of current and future support that's going to be required under the particular order? And there seemed to be a consensus from the committee that it wanted to be able to do that. For example, you have a Florida support order requiring an obligor to pay $500 a month. That obligor is now employed in a minimum wage job. Florida asks Oregon to enforce the $500 per month support order. Seemed to be the consensus of the committee that they wanted the administrator to be able to enter a prospective support order for something that is realistically related to the obligor's current ability to pay support. It would not be a modification of the Florida decree. If he went back to Florida, he or she would still be liable for the $500. But in Oregon, you'd just be liable for whatever the administrator had ordered. So on page 6, line 7, there's a change to the procedure that allows the modification of administrative orders. This is not the central change that incorporates just what I was talking about. This is merely, it comes first in the bill, so that's why I'm talking about it. If an obligor fails to request a hearing and an order is entered and 4, 5, 6 months down the road, he says, hold it, I can't afford this, I'm only making minimum wages, then the obligor would be able to come in and move for a modification pursuant to this amendment on page 6. Just clarifies the authority of the administrator to hear a modification on that. On page 7, the proposal is to delete lines 5 through 7. Again, this comes out of concerns expressed at hearing regarding what happens in the default situation. An order or a notice and finding has been served on the obligor. The obligor says, I want a hearing. It goes to administrative hearing. What do you do if the person doesn't show up at that point? The APA requires a prima facie case be presented. If the Support Enforcement Division were actually in court seeking a support order, no prima facie case would have to be made. You would simply take your order. The bill proposed that the hearings officer would simply dismiss the request because the person didn't show up and send it back to the administrator, either SED or the DA, and they would go ahead and proceed as if there had been no request for hearing. Chairman Fry suggested that that might not be the best way, and perhaps it would be better to have some sort of affidavit procedure. So this is the affidavit procedure. The administrator or custodial parent would recite in an affidavit to the degree known the needs of the child, the party's income, and the ability to pay support. And then the administrator would enter an order consistent with the known or believed ability of the parent as recited in the affidavit. And that would be your default procedure. It would not be sent back to the administrator, but you would at least have some evidence on the record.
Questions on that?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
I guess, excuse me, Ms. Young, on your amendments dated March 31st, that's hearing officer on the first. Look on page 7, delete lines 5 through 7. Then you have FICER, F-I-C-E-R,
yeah.
Hearings officer.
Senator Hill, that's because on line 4 it's OF dash. it's a hyphenated word.
Okay.
I had to look that one up myself. Too.
Okay.
It looks a little funny, I know.
Go ahead.
Okay. The next section of amendments is after line 43 on the same page, page 7. You're talking about when you're attempting to register the foreign state's administrative or judicial order, you're sending out a notice to that person saying, hey, we're going to register this particular thing. This subsection E would be a statement to the parent saying, if you don't think the current support is appropriate and you want it changed, then you can request that you be required to pay a different amount of future support. This is merely the technical language of the notice that's being sent out. Then you have a series of, on line 44 and on page 8, changing subsection.
Before you leave, I'm looking at the paragraph that begins after line 43, insert colon, all right? If you look at the next to the last line in the paragraph, and the phrase "different than those required," you see that? Okay, I'm suggesting that the word "than," that the word "from" be substituted for the word "than."
I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I think there's a series of "thens" in these amendments. So. Okay, moving on to deleting line 5 on page 8. Again, this is simply carrying forth what I perceived was the committee's intent, the statement that if you don't request a hearing within 14 days, or you don't request that the order amount in the future be different, then a default order can be entered. That's just simply another statement that goes on the notice to the obligor. The deletion in line 6 of within 14 days is because you've stuck it in. For the commission, and there were certain politics going on, which I'm not privy to, in the governor's office, which resulted in her losing her appointment. She was not only a valuable member of the conference, she was also vice president of the conference, and as a result, she lost that office and I think a chance to bring some significant benefit to the state of Oregon in terms of prestige and possibly a convention, which would mean some money to the state of Oregon.
She would have been the first woman president of that organization. I think it's too bad that happened, but then it happened. So I guess my guess was right on this.
That, Mr. Chair, that position, however, would not be available any longer to her. My tip.
Mr. Chair, she served as a holdover for the full vice presidency. I suspect she could be nominated as president. As far as her being re-nominated to the commission, the appointments come up on a periodic basis, and somebody else could simply not be appointed. One of the problems with the Uniform State Laws Committee is it is generally very nice to have members from your state on the committee because that ensures that other states' laws are going to tend to conform to what you have in your particular state. And that's rather attenuated, I agree. But one of the problems with the Uniform State Laws Commission is after 20 years of service on the committee, you become a life member. And it used to be Oregon had the same people appointed over and over until we got life members, and then you opened up spaces for new people. And it goes both ways. I believe the amendment supported by Senator Frye last session would have prohibited successive terms on the Uniform State Laws Committee, and therefore that would have obviated any possibility of getting life members. This doesn't.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Well,
why not?
Okay. I think it might be. Well, who wants to do what here? I'd just say one further thing. You know, we have a number of uniform state laws in Oregon, and it seems like every session there are one or two more proposed. And as far as I'm concerned, we could have 6 members of the commission there, because that's just all the more weight that we would carry in terms of what finally is passed on to us here in the legislature by the National Commission. But, okay. Senator Cohn, do you want to make a motion?
Do you want to make a motion tabled?
Or does anyone want to make a motion
tabled?
Well,
I don't feel that strong that I'm the single person who wants to table.
Well, all right,
but if we're off on the...
Well, I'll make the motion to table.
Okay.
Right, Senator Brockman moves to table. Senate Bill 300, call a roll, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Cohen?
Aye.
Andy?
Aye.
Hill?
No.
Wires? Aye.
No. Senator Wires, you want to vote?
Yes.
We're voting. It's academic how you vote, actually, but no, I think it is. Yeah. Yeah. Motions. The motion is to table.
Oh, the motion's table.
Yeah. All right.
No.
Senator Wires votes no. Senator Frye votes no. The motion carries 4-3.
So the bill got tabled? The
bill's tabled. Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess that's all left here.
So. I'm stealing it.
Look, you've got my pretty.
Let's get the sense of it. Let's get the sense of it.
Yes, exactly.
We'll take Senate Bill 111.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this bill made some technical and substantive changes to the law relating to DWE diversion programs. The most substantial change that, well, one of the most substantial changes that would made would be to require the defendant to prove his or her eligibility by a preponderance of the evidence. Another substantial change would be to allow, as prima facie evidence, certified driving records to show whether or not they've met the criteria of diversion. There were some less substantial changes made to the law in terms of clarifying what the procedure is when someone appears to be violating the diversion agreement and sets forth the procedure whereby the person can be called in front of the judge and the judge can decide whether or not the person is to be thrown out of the diversion program or maintained in it. Now, at the request of the chair, I have drafted an amendment that relates to the most substantial change of the bill. What the amendment does, this is amendment dated 32587, labeled LC864, would on page 4 of the bill delete lines 36 and 37. That would, the effect of the amendment would be to eliminate the shifting of the burden to the defendant. It would leave intact other sections of the statute relating to requesting a hearing and the court deciding whether someone violated the program. There was testimony on both sides of the issue. I had directed some questions to a couple of the judges as to what conclusive or what material effect shifting the burden would have. I believe the testimony was probably not much. But the initial thrust of the bill as to this section was to address the situation where if a person applies for a diversion program and has another driving under the influence conviction in their past. Under current law, if that prior conviction was done without the benefit of counsel, it cannot be used to exclude you from the program. So the question arises, the person comes in and says, Judge, I do have a prior DWE conviction. It was without the benefit of counsel. Now, the question is then, who is the judge to believe and what decision the judge is to make? Under current law, if the prosecutor comes in with a record showing there was counsel, that would suffice under current law and under the proposed law. If the person comes in and says, I didn't have prior counsel, and the prosecutor says, I have nothing to dispute that, again, nothing would change. Where this bill would possibly make a difference, if the person says, I had a prior conviction, I didn't have counsel, and then there was some question raised on the record. Maybe counsel was appointed, maybe counsel was discharged, maybe the person wasn't properly advised. This unchanged would put the burden on the defendant rather than the prosecutor. A question was raised as to whether shifting the burden would require more indigent counsel to be appointed because now the defendant has to prove an element to get into the diversion program. According to Mr. Jones, who has the contract for Multnomah County, most people, the vast majority of people, never ask for counsel. They just get into the program. But for those persons who can't decide, who have trouble, don't know what to do, they sometimes do ask for counsel, and they may additionally ask for counsel under this section. So the major amendment that's listed as LC 864 would just delete that shifting of the burden. The other amendment is technical. That's on line 37 of page 5, and it requires that termination orders not only be served on the defendant, but the defendant's attorney of record.
All right. Senator Hamby moves the dash one amendment stated March 25th to Senate Bill 111. Discussion? Counsel, let me ask. The current law puts the burden on the state to show non-eligibility.
Well, current law doesn't exactly speak to the issue. It requires that the prosecutor have a certain amount of time, I believe it's 15 days, to lodge an objection. Yes. At that time, there is a hearing held and there's evidence.
Yes.
And the court makes a decision as to whether the person's eligible or not. So current law doesn't address it, but I think that because the statute talks in terms of the district attorney raising the objection, it would then be the prosecutor's job to make good on his or her objection and show the court why the person is not eligible for the program.
Okay, now this amendment would specifically provide that the burden of proof is on the defendant. Is that it?
The proposed bill would. The amendment would leave law unchanged in the
area. Yes, would leave the law unchanged. Hill.
Mr. Chairman, on the staff measure analysis provided by counsel on page 2, these things to me really speak against the bill. And I think we cover these. We have here possible constitutionally defective. The bill may have the effect of forcing more defendants back onto the trial docket.
Senator, the amendment now that we have before us would make this moot.
Make this moot.
All of those?
Right.
The three? All right.
Yeah, because the defendant would not have the burden. So I think all three of those issues there would be right. Mooted by the amendment. That everybody's understanding of it? I think that's
okay.
Counsel.
Yeah. Well,
that's correct. Right. You just leave present law unchanged in the area.
Okay. Any further discussion on the...
Remind us then what's left of the bill.
Well, what's left of the bill is it provides that a driving record is prima facie evidence regarding the eligibility requirement. So if the driving record says you've had a prior DWI conviction, that's going to be, unless you can rebut that evidence, that's going to show you're ineligible. Similarly, if it shows you've been in another DWI diversion program, another alcohol program. The other change in the bill is it more clearly provides for the court what is the procedure you follow when someone possibly should be terminated from the diversion program and sets forth the procedure. An order issues to show cause. It's served on the defendant. It's served on the defendant's counsel. And then a hearing is held to determine whether the person should be maintained or kicked out of the program.
Okay. Any objections to the motion to amend? It's so ordered then. So Senator Hamby moves Senate Bill 111 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Aye.
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 Aye. Carries.
Mr. Chair, did
Senator Hamby
have a? I just noticed a little note here to myself. Fiscal impact $272,000. Or was that just a note on some other item?
It must be from some other item.
I've got a note in my file that says none.
None?
I don't believe this bill had any
fiscal impact. It was a note or something else. Thank you. I couldn't figure out why, unless it was additional.
I'll carry that bill.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this bill would prohibit the filing of a diversion petition after a plea or after trial. Under current law, a person can file a petition. The court has discretion to accept it or reject it. In any case, the petition has to be filed within 30 days of first appearance. You may recall that Mr. Yulee testified that he had a client in which he was not permitted to file the petition after trial. He took it to the Court of Appeals. The court said, you have to permit the person to file the petition. He filed the petition. The court then rejected it in its discretion. This bill would prohibit a person from filing the diversion petition afterwards. There was substantial testimony on both sides of the issue. Mr. Yulee contended it was unconstitutional. The judges that were here contended that diversion is a privilege, not a right, and is not unconstitutional. The judges contended that this was manipulating the system and allowing defendants to get two bites at the apple. Mr. Yulee contended that to do this would just be coercive and to allow persons who might be innocent or should be convicted to require to make that choice and not to go to trial. There is one minor change. If the committee does adopt the bill, it should adopt a technical amendment, which just adds in, or clarifies that when we're talking about plea, we're also talking about no contest pleas, and that would be on page 1, line 13.
Is that the term that's used in the present law, no contest
plea? It is.
How come they use that instead of
nolo contendere? I'm not sure. The current law is guilty plea or no contest plea.
Not that I'm objecting to changing the Latin to the English in the criminal code, but kind of curious. Well, it's kind of a question about the fact that there are individuals who would rather go through a diversion program and then risk a conviction before a jury. And so undoubtedly there are some cases out there where people go through diversion who actually should be going to trial because the evidence would be insufficient to convict them. But it's kind of like those individuals that agree to a plea of guilty and aggravated murder in order to escape a possible death sentence. So the chair's open.
I'll move the bill.
I like it.
All right. Senator Brenneman moves the amendment to Senate Bill 177 of that's dash one amendment.
Oh, I didn't see those.
Any objection? That's so ordered then.
Senator Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one issue I didn't alert you to is the emergency clause on Section 3. I don't know whether you want to address that or not.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned that, Council.
Mr. Swank, did you have anything to add as to why the emergency clause was added on this bill?
For the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. The emergency clause was added to this bill because the judges and the judges committee who had the bill introduced felt that the sooner this kind of activity of trying to give people double bites at the apple on diversion was stopped, the more it would stop the clogging of the court. So they requested that it be drafted with an emergency clause.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
I'm not inclined to put it on.
I'm not either.
I'd move that we delete it.
All right.
May I ask the witness one other question?
Yes, Brian, come back, please.
Another note I know I've written to myself, apparently regarding Section 2, I have a recommendation to change to the date of offense. Brad, do you remember what that comment was
Yeah, there was, I'm sorry, there was a request, I never got an amendment on it, to change this from, I believe, the date of citation.
Citation to the date of offense.
You sure that was from the other bill?
This one talks about the date of commission of the offense.
I have a page 2, line 20. Apply, as the printed bill reads, that this bill would apply to defendant whose first appearance on the summons occurs on or after the effective date of the act. And the suggestion was that it should apply to the date of offense occurring on or after the effective date of the act. Mr. Swank, do you want to speak to that suggestion? I'm not exactly sure what difference that makes.
Well, Section 2 of the bill is a bill that talks about defendants to whom the bill will first apply, and I don't know who made the suggestion, but we weren't.
It was Judge McCormick, I believe.
As the Judicial Department has no official position on that, it would work one way or the other.
Well, I think if we took the emergency clause out, I wouldn't have any objection to Section 2 the way it is. The choice there is...
It's a choice for the committee about where they want it to be.
Okay. You see what the choice would be there? Okay.
Implementation date.
Well,
as far as whether you're going to start them at from the date of offense or the effective date of the act, correct?
No, to take the emergency clause off, a time frame that will allow people to get
anyway,
in place.
Yes.
Senator Cohen's motion is to amend the bill by deleting Section 3. Any objection to that? All right, that's so ordered. And then we...
Whatever people want to do with the other piece, I don't care about that.
Yeah, we have... let's see, did we adopt the amendment? We did adopt the Dash 1 amendment,
yes.
Didn't we? All right. So Senator Brenneman moves Senate Bill 177 as amended in the Dash 1 amendment dated 3/25/87 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion on this?
Mm-hmm.
Call the roll, please.
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Aye. Carries. Senator Hill, do you want to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay. That gives us all something to do.
We're all done.
We're all done, with one exception. And we got Senate Bill 213, which we're not really ready to. Depends on the consensus of the committee. My view is I'm not really thrilled by this bill myself. You'll recall we had if a majority of the committee is thrilled with the bill, we'll put it back on for a later work session because we can't send it out anyway. If the committee is not thrilled with the bill, then we could dispose of it otherwise today.
I'll move to table, Mr. Chair.
All right, Senator Hamby moves to table. I'll give people a minute here to refresh their recollections on that.
The bottom of the staff measure analysis gives some explanation of the amendments proposed. You might want to add as an additional, as number 4 there, that there is an emergency clause proposed in addition to 1, 2, and 3.
Are you ready for me to have the roll called? We're all taking a peek at this.
Oh, is there a motion?
Senator Hammond moved the table.
Ah.
Go ahead and call the roll.
Move the table?
Okay.
Brenneman?
No.
Aye.
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 No.
Wire?
Aye. Motion carries.
Well, let's see.
Done some good things here. Now, tomorrow night, I hope we can do some more good things. And, well, I'm sure start promptly tomorrow at 5 and hopefully get done in a couple hours. Appreciate your kind attention. I guess we'll be in, the committee will be adjourned at 4:47.